Hello, and welcome to the Heathrow results for the full year to the 31st of December 2021. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question-and-answer session. And just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present John Holland-Kaye, Chief Executive Officer. Please begin your meeting.
Hello and welcome to all who've dialed in to join our 2021 full year results presentation. I'm John Holland-Kaye, the Chief Executive at Heathrow Airport, and joining me virtually are Javier Echave, our CFO, and Sally Ding, Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. Today we'll present our key operational and strategic highlights, including progress on our three-phase plan in response to COVID-19, a review of our financial position, which I'll ask Javier to take us through, and then we will conclude by taking your questions. So let me start with an overview of our key metrics on slide four. I don't need to tell you that 2021 has been another challenging year for Heathrow. For the second year running, the aviation sector has been severely impacted by lockdowns and constantly changing travel restrictions. Only 19.4 million passengers traveled through the airport, 12% down on 2020, and the lowest level since 1972. And if you're my age, you'll remember that Donny Osmond was top of the charts last time we had this few passengers traveling through. And our cumulative pre-tax losses since the start of COVID now stand at £3.8 billion. At the start of the pandemic, we set out a clear plan to protect the business, and we have continued to deliver against that plan. Despite the decline in passenger numbers, revenue was up 3% to £1.2 billion. On operating costs, we've seen the full year benefit of the actions we quickly initiated back in March 2020 and have achieved nearly £900 million of cost savings over the past 2 years. As a result, adjusted EBITDA increased to £384 million. Our balance sheet remains strong given our focus on preserving cash and protecting covenants. Gearing ratios are now back towards pre-COVID levels, and our liquidity position stands at £4 billion, supported by another year of funding. And I'd like to take the opportunity to thank our lenders and investors for their continued support. Behind the scenes, our colleagues have worked hard in close partnership with the airlines and all of Team Heathrow to reopen markets and reunite families and friends around the world. I'm particularly pleased that the focus on service was recognized by passengers, who voted us one of the top 10 airports in the world for customer service. We're now looking forward with more optimism than at any point over the past 2 years. Turning to slide five for a look at our strategic priorities. Our focus remains on operating a safe and resilient operation at lower costs while providing an even better service to our customers. As demand returns, we're transitioning into our winning the recovery phase and are working with all our Heathrow partners to ensure that we are operationally ready to meet this growth, what we call ramping up. We submitted our response to the CAA's initial proposals in December, alongside an updated business plan. Our response to the CAA highlighted material and basic errors in their analysis, which we hope will be addressed in their final decision. We believe that we can reach a settlement that allows us to provide a great service to passengers and a fair return to investors. On sustainability, we published our refreshed strategy earlier this month, Heathrow 2.0, Connecting People and Planet. This sets out new and more focused goals and targets. We're committed to building back from COVID as a stronger and more sustainable airport. And finally, although it may not be our immediate priority, the pandemic has strengthened the strategic case for expanding Heathrow. So moving to slide seven, we illustrate the extraordinary impact that COVID-19 has had on our passenger volumes. As the chart shows, we've successfully navigated many global events in the past 60 years, although none have impacted Heathrow with the same scale and severity as COVID-19. 2021 saw the lowest number of passengers traveling through in 50 years. We believe that 2022 will be the recovery year as countries start to live with COVID, but we also need to recognize that not all countries are moving at the same pace and that there may be more variants of concern in the future that trigger further border closures. As we're moving into the recovery phase, slide 8 provides a snapshot of our key markets based on current travel requirements. The removal of all travel restrictions for fully vaccinated passengers in the UK is a fantastic step forward and the first time that the UK has led the world in opening up. The restrictions remain in many of the markets we serve and continues to hamper the speed of recovery. Currently, 63% of our markets have some type of restrictions in place and they remain a significant barrier to travel. We're seeing good recovery in outbound tourism and visiting friends and family, but inbound tourism and business travel remain weak given the concerns of testing positive before returning home. And this is entirely understandable as someone traveling from a market like the United States that still requires testing on the return journey will be scared of testing positive and not being allowed home. And similarly, while COVID is widespread and there's a likelihood of new variants of concern, travelers will be concerned about sudden changes in border controls that could require them to quarantine. Until we see all restrictions removed in all the markets we serve and passengers are confident they won't be reimposed at short notice, we don't expect to see a full recovery to pre-pandemic levels. So we think that'll be more like 2025 to 2026. Turning to slide 9, we've provided a comparison to other European hub airports. The impact of COVID-19 has been felt on our competitive position relative to the other European hubs. We were the only major European hub where passenger numbers in 2021 were lower than 2020. And that's due to the more restrictive travel rules which remained in place in the UK for much of the year, where European hubs were able to fly within the EU. In terms of cargo, volumes through Heathrow are still 12% below 2019 levels compared to Schiphol and Frankfurt, where volumes are up versus 2019. As the majority of cargo is carried in the hold of passenger planes, the lifting of restrictions provides an opportunity to increase cargo volumes to help support UK exports and restore supply chains. On slide 10, we look at our traffic forecast over the next 5 years. Throughout the pandemic, we've been guided by our traffic forecasts. During the downturn, we cut our costs based on the worst possible outcomes, which is generally what happened. We've developed a range of scenarios for the recovery phase. Our low scenario assumes a severe impact of new variants, and the high scenario assumes a rapid removal of all global restrictions. All these outcomes are possible, but the mid case, which is our base case, balances the risks and is broadly in line with IATA's global forecast. While our plan is based on the mid case, we're trying to build in flexibility so we can meet demand if we have the high case actually materializing. Our aim is not to constrain airline growth. This could mean that we carry slightly higher costs than actual demand would justify, but that is better than not having enough resource and having to turn away demand, which is what has happened in markets such as the US during their recovery. Slide 11 provides an update on how we are now investing ahead of growth. And you'll see the change in focus through our cash burn. During the protect the business phase, we kept a tight control over operating costs and capital expenditure and made significant cuts. Across the past 2 years, we've saved around £2 billion in cash flow, nearly £900 million in OPEX, and £1.1 billion in deferred CAPEX. We are now increasing cash burn ahead of the recovery. We're actually recruiting over 1,000 people for our own team and more in our supply chain. With significant pressures through higher energy prices and general inflation, we expect OPEX to be almost back to 2019 levels this year. Capital expenditure will also increase as we start to catch up on the £1.1 billion of underinvestment from the past 2 years. And interest paid will step up as we see a lower benefit this year from the swap reprofiling program that we completed in 2020. That said, we still retain a very robust liquidity position, which provides flexibility as we move into the win the recovery phase of our plan. So slide 12 shows the status of our operations as we move into winning the recovery. We've seen an increase in air traffic movements to about two-thirds of 2019 levels. and this is likely to increase further with the reinstatement of the 70-30 slots rule for the summer season, which starts at the end of March. Passenger numbers are currently on average around 45% of 2019 levels, and we're forecasting 22 to be on average 56% of 2019 levels. January was behind expectations, but we expect the summer to be much busier with outbound holidaymakers looking for guaranteed sunshine after 2 years of staycations. The recovery phase is significantly peakier than we were used to in 2019. Given the high proportion of outbound tourists, school holidays are especially busy, and anyone traveling last Saturday might have felt that we were back to full strength. But once the schools are back, it will be much quieter. Our challenge in the recovery phase is to manage to the peak, not to the average. Peak hours in the summer could be almost as busy as in 2019, so we will need almost all facilities available and a significant increase in resources. So although we don't need Terminal 4 to be open to meet the average demand, we've decided to reopen it to ensure that we have enough check-in and stand capacity at peak times over the summer. We are still working through in detail how many people we will need to recruit across the airport, but you will see that we've had around 30,000 passes, that's a third of all of those in issue, returned during the pandemic, as airport businesses have cut resource. We have scaled up our recruitment and training capability and are coordinating all of the employers across Team Heathrow to make sure we are all working to a common plan. So now let's move to the third phase of our plan, to build back better. Slide 13 provides an overview of our updated sustainability strategy, Heathrow 2.0. And this builds on the plan we launched 5 years ago, which has been materially successful, hitting most of the targets that we set, even though at the time we set them, they seemed incredibly ambitious. The new plan offers more ambitious goals, but a much more streamlined framework. And it's really divided into two pillars of work. First of all, targeting net zero aviation. And secondly, ensuring that Heathrow is a great place to live and work. And achieving these goals will enable us to remain a sustainable employer for future generations, as well as protecting the benefits of aviation in a world without carbon. Our ambition is for 2019 to have been the year of peak fossil fuel carbon at the airport. By 2030, we plan to cut carbon from flights by up to 15% compared with 2019, and to cut carbon on the ground by at least 45%. We'll do this by improving the efficiency of our operation, changing airspace, encouraging greater uptake of sustainable aviation fuels through our new SAF-based Airlines Incentive Program, the first of its kind in the UK. And we'll also be exploring how we can support electric and hydrogen-based flight. We're introducing measures which will minimize noise and improve local air quality. And we plan to provide 10,000 new jobs, apprenticeships, and early career opportunities for local people by 2030, making sure that those who live closest to the airport get the greatest benefits from having a world-class hub on their doorstep. We are already delivering against these targets, and we're proud that all of our direct supply chain will receive at least the London Living Wage from this April. And I'm pleased to see that many other organizations across Heathrow are following suit. Heathrow 2.0 lays out the strategies, policies, and standards, as well as governance structures that we have in place to achieve this. They will be reflected in our management and colleague incentive plans, but also you'll start to see them in future fundraising. On slide 14, we have an update on regulation. Now, we've designed a balanced business plan for the H7 regulatory period. It's built on delivering the outcomes that are most valued by consumers. We already have good standards for overall passenger service, for asset availability, peer service, security wait times, and those are recognized by our status as one of the world's top 10 airports in 2021 in the Skytrax passenger survey. In H7, we are planning to maintain these standards. We're also investing to address consumer hotspots, improving service for passengers who require particular support, and maintaining COVID cleanliness measures so that passengers know the airport will be clean and safe. On slide 15, we show the key focus areas for investment. After 2 years of underinvestment, we need to restart and scale up our capital program. We've identified a range of projects that will improve our service and resilience. We will need to invest in replacing the Terminal 2 baggage system. The current system has been in place for 50 years, and parts of it we can only source by buying them on eBay. So that's a major concern from a resilience point of view that we need to replace. We will also need to invest in new security scanners in all the terminals, a major challenge in a live environment and a requirement to meet the DfT's mandate by June 2024. This will improve passenger service by allowing everyone to keep liquids and laptops in their bags and to deliver some of the operating cost reductions in our plan through higher flow rates. We also plan to invest in our retail and digital offering and our strategy to decarbonize aviation. Without this critical investment in the coming years, the recovery will be slower and passenger charges will be higher. Let's now take a closer look at the details of our business plan and the next steps for H7 in slide 16. So the first time we saw any details from the CAA was in its initial proposals that we received in October. Now, we identified some material and basic errors in the CAA's analysis, which was very disappointing after having worked on this for over 2 years. And it demonstrated that the analysis had been rushed and that undermined the proposals they had put in place. The errors included a traffic forecast, which is not actually deliverable within our air traffic movement cap, and unrealistic assumptions on operating costs. For example, the base year of the operating cost forecast 2022, this year we've already started, had a cost base £175 million lower than we actually spent in 2020, a year when we had half the passenger numbers and half of the airport was closed. That is just not realistic. But when these errors are corrected, it will lead to a higher charge in the final decision. Our focus is on reaching a fair settlement, and we've developed a business plan which balances the interests of consumers, airlines, and investors. It delivers a minimum level of cash flows to maintain an investment-grade credit rating, ensuring we can access debt markets efficiently to finance the business. The plan results in a charge of £42 per passenger for H7. Now, we do believe the market can bear this charge at this time. It's a relatively small increase compared to overall ticket prices and only adds 2% to the average ticket price. We also have the opportunity to bring the charge down to around £34, close to the current level, by deferring regulatory depreciation. We believe our shareholders may be willing to accept a deferral provided they were guaranteed that it could be recovered during H8 and had the confidence that all efficiently incurred capital expenditure will be recovered, which is, of course, the cornerstone of a functioning regulatory system. The CAA's decision so far not to suspend depreciation over the past 2 years effectively means that 10% of all of the regulated asset base has now been disallowed, despite being efficiently incurred. If this is not appropriately addressed, it risks future investment and our ability to provide sustainable levels of service and resilience. We are continuing to engage with the CAA on our plan ahead of the final decision later this year. I'll now hand over to Javier to talk about our financial performance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John, and hello to everyone. I hope you and your loved ones are keeping safe and well. And as John mentioned, I will now share with you an overview of our key financial performance starting on slide 18. As John mentioned, although passenger numbers fell over the year, our revenue increased slightly to £1.2 billion. The full year benefit of the actions taken in 2020 meant that operating costs fell by 8% to £830 million. Overall, this resulted in adjusted EBITDA increasing 42% to £384 million. Our losses before taxes was £1.8 billion, primarily resulting from the impact of COVID and higher inflation on our financing costs, driving negative fair value movements. Capital expenditure decreased by around 50% to £252 million as we continue to constrain investment to protect our cash position while making sure that our assets remain safe to operate. Cash flow from operations saw a significant increase to £613 million, and that's a reflection of the actions taken in prior years. So it's primarily driven by the growth in EBITDA, but also positive working capital movements reflecting the unwind of the prepayments made in 2020, although slightly offset by an increase in our debtor balance, a straight increase. Our balance sheet remains strong. Net debt, despite the lower traffic, was broadly flat, reflecting the delivery of our cash protection plan with £2 billion saved across both OPEX and CAPEX between 2020 and 2021, and close management of our working capital position. Although our cash balance declined over the year as we repaid the revolving credit facility we had drawn at the start of the pandemic, our overall liquidity position remains stable at £4 billion. Let's now take a closer look at the details, starting with revenue on slide 19. Overall revenue for the period increased by 3.3% to £1.2 billion. Aeronautical revenue declined by 14% to £554 million, and retail revenue declined by 7% to £217 million, driven by lower passenger numbers and fewer aircraft movements. Other revenue increased by 51% to £443 million, driven by a significant increase in other regulated charges in 2021. This represents revenue under recover in prior periods, mainly 2020, and we recovered that through the airport cost recovery charge that we agreed with airlines and our general ORC tariffs. We continue to take steps to protect our retail revenue despite a very challenging environment and the government's unfortunate decision to remove tax-free shopping at Heathrow. This includes improving our digital offering as well as identifying new retail partners to replace those who are no longer trading. Now, moving on costs on slide 20, overall, the picture of controllable operating costs is a positive one, where we are seeing costs down by 10% on the year to £830 million. And obviously, that reflects the full year benefit of the timely actions we implemented in 2020. Across the past 2 years, we have delivered around £870 million of savings versus our expected pre-COVID run rate. By components, our people cost declined by 9% versus 2020, mainly due to the organizational restructures we implemented soon in the pandemic. The reduction in operational, maintenance, utilities, and other costs were primarily driven by operational efficiencies, renegotiation of supplier contracts, as well as stopping all non-essential costs. Whilst we have seen the benefit of the cost initiatives implemented in 2020, many of these initiatives, such as the furlough scheme, for example, have ended. And that explains why in quarter four alone, operating costs increased by 18% versus the prior year as we started to invest ahead of demand and we see this trend continuing. Looking at our OPEX profile on page 21, as low volume is the biggest obstacle to financeability, we must protect growth and prepare our operations to ramp up ahead of demand. As previously mentioned, 73% of our cost savings were temporary, such as the furlough scheme benefits, colleague pay reductions, and the consolidation of operations. So with around 95% of our cost base either fixed or semi-fixed, we expect, therefore, an increase in operating costs to support the recovery from now on. In addition, we also expect to see upward pressure on costs, given utilities pricing and inflation. Continuing with our strict focus on cash flows on page 22, over the year, net debt remained broadly flat at £13.3 billion. Net cash flow from operations in 2021 was £613 million, driven by growth in EBITDA and a positive working capital movements as the prepayments from 2020 unwound. We benefited from further deferral of capital expenditure and have saved £1.1 billion in cash terms over the past 2 years by limiting CapEx to the minimum necessary to operate the airport safely. The reprofiling of our sub-portfolio has also helped and minimized interest paid in the period. Obviously, no dividends to Ultimate shareholders were paid, and that will remain the case until our Hydro Finance gearing is back below 87.5%. The financial impact of the last 2 years has made the reality for equity extremely challenging. Over the last 15 years, private investment has made Hydro a world leader in service to passengers with no cost to the taxpayer, enabling material premiums to our airline passengers, but with sizable losses to shareholders. A strong regulatory model is critical to incentivize further private investment and enable sustainable levels of passenger service. An investable Hydro through a functioning regulatory system is not simply about shareholder returns. It provides the foundation for minimum cash flows, solid investment-grade credit ratings, and our ability to access capital markets efficiently and economically. We must be absolutely clear. Failure from the CAA to balance risk and return as part of the final H7 decision will make our service and resilience proposition completely unsustainable due to our inability to attract private investment. The CAA can determine the outcome for consumers, either enabling a virtuous circle that leads to better service and lower charges, or a vicious cycle with higher charges and a quick return to the Hydro hassle of the early 20s. Moving to slide 23 to look at our gearing ratios, our regulatory asset base increased by 6% over the year to £17.5 billion as a result of inflation, as well as the interim adjustment awarded by the CAA. Combined with the actions taken to manage our net debt, gearing ratios are returning back towards 2019 levels, which is obviously fantastic news for everyone, including creditors. While the headroom to gearing trigger events at Class A and Class B remains comfortable, gearing at Hydro Finance remains slightly above 87.5%, but we remain comfortable with that position. As a reminder, the Hydro Finance gearing covenant level was revised to 93.5% in 2021, following the waiver secured in July 2020. Regarding interest cover ratios, a waiver of the Hydro Finance ICR was successfully approved last August, and I would like to add my gratitude for your continuous support. Thank you. At Hydro SP, the distribution lockup remains in place because of the trigger event that occurred in relation to the senior and junior ICR ratios for 2020. However, with our 2021 historic ratios and 2022 forecast ratios, now above trigger event thresholds, we anticipate being out of the distribution lockup during the first part of this year, which can help to ensure that Hydro Finance continue having a healthy level of liquidity. Slide 24 shows the inflation exposure at Hydro. And obviously, we're all concerned about inflation. The high levels of inflation are currently presenting a significant challenge to many businesses and cost of living. And at Hydro, the risk management policies that we have in place meant that we have taken responsible actions for some time now to actively manage the impact of that high inflation. Our hedging program balances risks while supporting growth in RAB and revenue. We aim to target an inflation hedging ratio of around 50% of our regulatory asset base by using linker bonds or linking our debt through inflation via swaps. And obviously that protects an inflation-linked return and manages downside risk. As a consequence of this hedging program, however, is the mark-to-market volatility we see through the P&L. You can see in period 2021 impacting negatively by around £600 million. And obviously, as we can't hedge account our inflation swaps, mark-to-market volatility is currently elevated. Finally, I'm moving on to slide 25 to the financial section presentation with our outlook. Despite a slower start of the year, given the impact of Omicron, we maintain our passenger forecast of 45.5 million passengers for 2022, and our full-year EBITDA outlook remains in line with our base case published in our January investor report update, whilst recognizing that we continue operating with material uncertainty driven by both traffic volatility as well as the uncertainty associated with regulatory outcomes. We are forecasting no breach of covenants in 2022 across the wider group, and we will continue to monitor passenger numbers and provide a further update to all of you as part of our Q1 results late in April. So with that, I conclude the financial review, and I'll hand back to you, John, for closing comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Javier. So our vision remains to give passengers the best airport service in the world. As we move out of the protect the business phase, we will go back to focusing on our four priorities, which are a kind of balanced scorecard by which we manage the business. We are a service business, and service is delivered by our people. So Mojo, or making Heathrow a great place to work, is our first priority. This year, we will focus on improving facilities for colleagues, as well as well-being and mental health, after an extremely stressful 2 years. We will also invest in recruitment, training and development to support internal promotions, which will help meet our commitment on career opportunities for local people and diversity. Transforming customer service will focus on providing capacity ahead of demand during the recovery phase, alongside improvements for passengers requiring support. Feed the Plan will focus on delivering the cost efficiencies and commercial growth built into our revised business plan. And Sustainable Growth will focus on delivering Heathrow 2.0 and starting to plan for the restart of our work to expand Heathrow. We will now take questions from participants, and I will hand over to Nazanin to coordinate. Thank you.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. You can also submit your questions in the Q&A section of the WebEx at the bottom right of the screen, or if you wish to ask a question through WebEx audio, click the raise hand button in the bottom right of the participant panel. And please click to lower your hand after your question has been answered. We have a question from the line of Paul Dew from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, John. Thank you very much all for the presentation. That was very helpful. Three questions, if I may. You mentioned the expansion is maybe coming back more on the table now than kind of last year, given what happened. But would you just be able to update us on kind of where we are on that and what's the process and potential timeline around that? Understanding, obviously, there's some uncertainty. And then maybe for Javier, on the inflation side, would you be able to just give some color kind of on how we should see inflation? And is that a net positive for the business? Obviously, you mentioned you kind of hedge 50%, but it's obviously helped the gearing ratios. Just any color you could kind of give there would be great. And then also finally, just on the interest payments, obviously they're lower in 2021. Could you just help understand the phasing of that interest coming back in future years and kind of what timeline that will come back in over? Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, obviously I would be very happy to answer questions on both inflation and interest payments, but you're quite right to go to someone with a lot more expertise than I have. So on expansion, there's probably not much more that I can share with you. We'll be reviewing the timetable as we go through this year. And we'll be able to tell you more about that over the coming 12 months. Just to remind you, in terms of where we had got to, we had the 4-1 majority in Parliament supporting the national policy statement a few years ago. That's now gone through the full legal process and has been upheld. So we still have all the legal support that we need. We were about halfway through the planning application process before we paused the work on that. It'll take a little bit of time to restart that. And of course, we're looking at the £500 million of investment that we've already put into that to make sure that as much of that can be reused as possible. So we still have some more work to do on planning before we then go through the planning process, which takes a couple of years before we can then start getting on with the work. But we'll give you more of an update on that when we have completed our assessment. But Javi, let me hand over to you for the more technical questions.
Great. Thank you, John. And thank you, Paul. Great question on inflation. Obviously, inflation is not great news for consumers, which obviously we are trying to mitigate. We will see our costs going up, utilities and labor costs mainly. But I think that overall regulation helps because our revenue, costs, investment are linked to inflation in our regulatory model. So we will see that some exposure to that inflation will be captured by regulation. Importantly, our balance sheet, our regulatory asset base are directly linked to RPI. And to manage that equity exposure to RAP, we are indexing our debt to inflation by around 50%, which is what our board believes is the right exposure for shareholders. So in terms of positives or negatives, obviously for creditors is good news because we will see gearing coming down. For equities, potentially protected through regulations, but obviously we are doing our best to try to contain increasing costs for consumers. In terms of interest payments, I think what we did back in 2020 is we did two things. We changed some of the profiling of our swaps, and through that we will see cash savings of around £250 million both in 2021 and 2022. So you will see only from 2023 costs coming down. The other thing that we did is we prepaid some of the interest payments in 2020. And therefore, comparing year for year, what you will see is unusually higher costs in 2020 and unusually lower costs in 2021. So year on year, you will see a difference of around £350 million. I think it's important to mention that those prepayments, both interest and OPEX, were funded with the capital injection we included in Heathrow Airport Limited. So creditors shouldn't feel that cash flow management was done through liquidity existing in the company, but actually through liquidity, additional liquidity injected into Heathrow. So hopefully that answers the question, Paul.
Thank you very much. Very helpful.
And the next
thank
question,
you, Paul.
The next question comes from the line of Jean-Etienne Pierre from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jean-Etienne.
Good afternoon. Hello. Good afternoon. Three questions. First one on other regulated charges. It was quite an help in 2021 revenues. Just to assess what part of this the increase we've seen in 2021 will be sustainable as part was due to revenue under recovered in prior periods. So just to assess what could be a kind of regular level. The other question is on the operating expenses. You expect operating expenses to be in 2022, based on your guidance, more or less in line with what we've seen in 2029. However, in between there was some cost savings. You indicated that 27% of the cost savings will be sustainable, and also there were lower passengers. So just to understand why we've seen this kind of similarity in terms of OPEX in 2022 versus 2029. And the last question is on what the level of CapEx you expect for 2022, of course, before any you receive the CAH with CAH decision, so it's more the floor CapEx you expect for 2022. Thank you.
Great. I'll pass most of this over to Javier, but just to give an overview on other regulated charges. These are effectively a fixed revenue that we have within our P&L. So on average, it is pretty constant year to year, adjusting for an element of demand and cost inflation and some of the activity drivers. And so some of the reduction, so we recover it on a per unit basis. So one of the biggest elements of it is baggage cost, which we recover on a per bag basis. And we base that on a forecast for baggage numbers in the following year. So, for example, in 2020, when baggage numbers were actually much lower than we had forecast them to be, our recovery was lower, but we were then able to catch that up again in the following year, which is why you see some of the increase. So this is one of the things about our regulatory model, which gives us some protection against falls in passenger numbers with some smoothing of cash flow that we wouldn't otherwise get. So it's actually a very helpful thing for us to have, given how exposed we are to passenger numbers for most of our other revenue. Javier, let me hand over to you to go into that a little bit more and some of the other costs.
Great. Well, thank you for the question. Great questions. Obviously, first of all, ORCs, John mentioned how it works, and the specific impact is that in 2020, we under-recovered by around £115 million. And obviously, what we did is we caught up in terms of recovery in 2021. So roughly in 2021, we had double the revenues that we normally would have. So you would expect that, subject to obviously any changes that the CMA might want to see in ORCs going forward, you should expect a more normalized level consistent with 19 and half of 2021. In terms of OPEX and CAPEX, obviously we just submitted our investor report in January. We remain the outlook in terms of OPEX and CAPEX. So in terms of OPEX, we forecasted a level of OPEX for 2022 of slightly more than 1.1 billion. And also we were clear in terms of what the CAPEX that we are seeing, which again is going to be starting to ramp up, but it's going to be slightly below £500 million. Probably implicit in your question is about ability to retain savings. I think we have explained through the presentation and previously that 95% of our costs are fixed or semi-fixed, and therefore our ability to retain savings in years to come probably is going to be reduced to something in the lines of £40 million per year. So as we start seeing traffic coming up, you would expect that we will get closer to 2019 levels, minus around £40 to £50 million. So I hope that helps.
Thank you. Thanks, Javier.
One more audio question from the line of James Sparrow from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Hi, James.
Yeah, hi. Hi, afternoon, everyone. Thanks very much for the call, and sorry to bombard you with questions from BNP, but I'm on a different side of the fence to John Etienne. Just got a couple of questions. One was kind of quite broad, really. If, you know, as we enter the sort of recovery phase, I just wondered if maybe you could sort of talk around any sort of like structural changes you're seeing to travel habits and how you're kind of like planning around those. I think, John, you said at the start that you thought the pandemic had kind of strengthened the argument for expanding Heathrow, and I'd be interested to maybe if you could just expand a little bit on that. And then the other kind of related question is more just around the sort of the whole concept of business risk and sort of rating agency approach. I mean, S&P put out something earlier this year. I mean, you flagged that there's a risk to your rating based on, you know, traffic numbers not hitting your targets, but I just wondered if you're concerned about whether, you know, you think, you know, given the experience of the last couple of years, the agencies will take a different view of how business risk has potentially changed for the worst in the sector. That's it for me. Thanks.
Fantastic. Thanks. Well, let me cover the first two and a half of those, and I'll ask Javier to fill in the gaps on the last one. So in terms of the structural changes, actually, I don't think we're going to see as much as people might have thought. So 2 years ago, when we all started having remote calls like this, we started thinking that we'd never go back to the office and we'd never need to get on a plane again. And I think actually what we've learned is that these kind of things have a role to play, but they can't replace the face-to-face contact that we have. Not just for people being able to see clients and customers, but also just being able to keep global organizations working. And I've spoken to some global consulting companies who had thought they weren't going to be flying for internal reasons from an environmental point of view, and then have come to realize they need to do it to maintain their culture. And so a lot of the business flight, which is probably the thing people thought would change most, has been at risk. Some of you may have been at COP26, and it was quite interesting talking to people there, because in one breath people would say, "Well, I don't really see the need to travel much anyway anymore, and I think I'm going to reduce my flying." And then you say, "So, have you found being in person at COP26 useful?" "Oh yes, absolutely. The things we've done here, we could never have done remotely." Fantastic. So where did you come from? Well, I came from the United States. So you cannot do your business and have the kind of engagement that you need to have without getting on a plane. The challenge is not about changing flying. It is about decarbonizing flying, which is why we've put so much emphasis on decarbonizing global aviation as the path to maintaining the benefits of aviation in a world without carbon. So actually, that's a bit of a digression, but I think we'll see business travel coming back. We've seen visiting friends and family come back very strongly. A lot of pent-up demand, grandparents not having seen their grandchildren for a long time. A lot of, you know, the UK is a very cosmopolitan country. A lot of people have just been desperate to go and see their loved ones. And a lot of younger people haven't been able to have the kind of freedom to have a gap year or equivalent or explore. A lot of older people have been stuck at home when they've got the time and the money to go traveling. So that has come back quite strongly. And actually tourism is coming back. I've been surprised by the strength of some of the outbound UK tourism, and is only tempered by the fact it's that for inbound tourism, that is still held back by all the testing. So I think one of the strengths of Heathrow is we have a very balanced business between visiting friends and relatives, business travel, and inbound and outbound tourism. And that's given us a lot of resilience during these times. And I think sets us up well for the future. So that's a long-winded way of saying I don't see major structural changes. Now, we are seeing some short-term changes in traffic flows. We've benefited from a lot of the consolidation, particularly by airlines such as Virgin and BA into Heathrow. And it's fantastic to see Florida flights traveling at the moment. That's a market that's traditionally gone to Gatwick, with Virgin having their Florida flights from there and BA the same. Fantastic to see over the weekend families with their Mickey Mouse hats and Mickey Mouse backpacks heading off to Florida. So we are seeing a little bit more of that mainstream holiday market, which is wonderful. Very high load factors traditionally. And of course, we're changing our retail mix to reflect some of those changes. And that's, in a way, a benefit of some of the retailers and restaurants having left Heathrow during the pandemic. We've been able to bring back a slightly different mix. So we've had JD Sports coming into Terminal 2. We've got a Chinese restaurant come into Terminal 2, which is the main terminal where our Asian flights fly from. So there are some changes in our mix to support that change in the market. Now, you touched on expansion, and I think everything that's happened in the last 2 years has really demonstrated why it is important to have a strong global hub airport in the UK, and that the arguments that were made during the Airports National Policy Statement process have been borne out. We've seen big global airlines reverting to the hub during COVID. You know, I've given some examples of that. We've seen a strengthening of the hub and spoke model as the only real way to get to long-haul destinations on a regular basis. And we've seen some of the long-haul, low-cost carriers' business models fail during COVID. And that shows a vulnerability to that as a long-term business model for regular connectivity. We've seen, we've always argued that there's a pent-up demand to come into Heathrow. And sure enough, when the slot rules are relaxed, 16 airlines, passenger airlines, came to operate from Heathrow that we'd never normally see, including ultra-low-cost carriers, which isn't what you'd expect to see coming in. And that just shows how much value there is for consumers in having more capacity at Heathrow. Better range of destinations, more competition between airlines will bring down prices, but also improve connectivity. And then finally, something that was a bit of a surprise was that we've always argued that the UK needs to have a strong hub airport because we provide the trade routes that the UK relies on. You'll know the belly hold of passenger planes carry UK exports and around the world and bring in our supply chain. But sometimes people would argue, well, surely it doesn't matter whether that big hub is in the UK. Why can't we fly via Schiphol or Charles de Gaulle, well, what we've seen during COVID is that those markets have been cut off from the UK. I think France has been cut off two or three times now, and Amsterdam the same. And you cannot have an independent trading nation like the UK, global Britain, dependent upon overseas hubs that can cut you off when they choose to. And that could be because of COVID. It could be because of political reasons, as we've seen with other countries that are too dependent on their trading competitors. So this is a real concern, I think, for the UK, and really fits into that global Britain narrative that is a big part of the UK government's plan. So that's why the strategic case is even stronger. And one of the reasons why we'll be restarting the expansion program as soon as we are able to. In terms of business risk, I'd probably ask Javi to come in on that.
Right. Thank you, James. Well, first of all, it's fantastic to see that Chinese walls are working well, so no worries about having many questions from several parts of BNP. I think in terms of some of your question about impact of inflation in our OPEX, we mentioned that we are maintaining our outlook for 2022, and therefore roughly our OPEX that we share in our investor report are roughly aligned with that. Probably we will see some risk coming from utilities, which at this stage probably we estimate in the region of £20 million. But again, I think that the rest, it was already well captured in our January investor report, which was just updated literally a month ago. In terms of business risk, obviously that's an excellent question, James, and that's why I think that you can see strengthening of our words when talking about financeability. We are very happy to talk about Mickey Mouse in the terminals, but we are very worried when that Mickey Mouse tone translates into our financing. And as you know well, obviously rating agencies have been evaluating these two things. First of all is cash flows, and I have to say that the three rating agencies and the analysts of those rating agencies has been fantastic over the last 2 years. They have been understanding of all these things. They have spent a lot of time with us, and they understand that, and actually they recognize the management actions that we have taken, and therefore they have been deeply understanding of the situations, the one-off situations, especially over the last 2 years. Having said that, also they have duties with all the creditors in terms of providing an independent assessment. And obviously, this is going to be the third year that we are underperforming credit ratings, and that explains why some of the actions we have seen. Moody's obviously recently have updated their outlook or have reaffirmed their outlook in terms of negative outlook, which obviously is concerning, and we continue working with that. But I think the point you mentioned about the Standard & Poor's is really important. Standard & Poor's underpin their credit rating based on business assessment. Traditionally, over the last 14 years that our capital structure has been in place, that business assessment has always been excellent. And we hope that to be the case. Obviously, it's for Standard & Poor's to provide an assessment in terms of how they see that that business risk going forward. But I think probably at this stage, what I would say is that definitely we have been received several questions from them, and therefore they are reviewing in terms of what the decision from the CA could mean in terms of that business risk. So obviously, James, we have been in constant dialogue with them. Probably, I think in the next soon we will get further updates from particularly Standard & Poor's, which we have been working with them in the last few weeks in terms of our annual normal assessment. But obviously, that business strength is critical. Standard & Poor's, particularly, they have been very vocal that the reason why we have an excellent business decision is precisely driven by regulation, cash flow predictability. And importantly, the CA demonstrating through facts rather than through words that actually they genuinely care about their duty on financeability. So obviously they are monitoring very carefully what's going to be the next steps on the CA during the summer. So James, probably I think is we will see how it comes, but obviously very good question, and which we are always we are also worried about.
Understood. Well, thanks very much for the answers.
Thanks, James.
And we have just a follow-up from Paul Dew from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hey, Paul.
Hi, thanks for taking the follow-up. Just wondered if you could kind of comment on the retail side, and is it too early to see the impact of kind of the UK government's decision? Are you getting any kind of insights from what you've seen as passenger numbers have stepped back up?
Yeah, it's really too early to tell with the impact of that because passenger numbers are so distorted. Typically, what you see is that when only a few people are flying, you get slightly higher retail revenue per passenger than when you're at full capacity. And one of the things that is quite notable is you get a much higher spend per passenger for direct passengers than for connecting passengers. Connecting passengers tend to just rush to the gate that they're flying from as soon as they can, and they tend to spend a bit less in country. During COVID, without a strong network, particularly across Europe with regular frequencies, we've had far fewer connecting passengers proportionally than we would have in normal times. So we're actually seeing slightly higher retail spend per passenger at the moment than we would expect in normal times, which distorts the impact of VAT. But I think as passenger numbers recover by the end of the year, we should get a better sense for what the underlying impact is of the VAT change. And obviously, we're working hard to mitigate that, working with retailers, taking a lower margin between us in order to help support the value proposition of the airport. And that might mean higher spend, but a lower margin than we would otherwise have had. And we'll be able to take you through that in a bit more detail towards the end of this year or maybe next year when we've got a bit more like-for-like data that we can show you.
Thank you very much.
And we don't have any further audio questions.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you all for taking the time today, and thank you for your support for Heathrow. We really do value that. I hope you can see that over the last couple of years, we've told you what we would do to protect the business and to conserve cash during the worst times and then be able to recover strongly when the market recovered. That's exactly what we are doing. We are taking a call on the market, having turned and now starting to invest ahead of recovery. We're certainly not out of the woods yet. There's certainly risk. One of those risks is regulation, and so we are very much reliant on the CAA doing what it should do to help to protect the downside through regulation, but also give us incentives with the airlines to help to bring passengers back as fast as possible. So we're now getting on with that recovery phase. We're going to do it in the right way, supporting our colleagues, our local communities, and decarbonizing global aviation. And we'll get on when the time is right to expand Heathrow as well. Most importantly, I hope that you stay safe and well, and that we will see you back traveling through Heathrow as soon as you are able to. And if you have a great experience, let me know. If you have a bad experience, let me know. We always want to learn to see how we can make every journey better. Thank you.
This concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.